Welcome to another brand new edition of T Watches a Scary Movie. My name is T, and of course, we are talking scary movies. Now, I appreciate you tuning in for another brand new episode of the show. Remember, new episodes are always guaranteed to go up every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. But as I release multiple reviews throughout the week, you're going to want to make sure you're subscribed to my channel, as that'll keep you alert for all the new reviews that I'm dropping. And the best way to do that is to go to my link tree, which is linktr.ee/tscarymovie. If you go to my link tree, that'll get you access to the YouTube page for video versions of the show, to your favorite podcasting platforms, the audio only versions of the show, to my TikTok page for my short horror videos, which I usually do after seeing a premiere of something, and to my Letterboxd, you can see my movie rankings throughout the year as well. Hit that subscribe button. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to subscribe there as well too, as that helps me out and gets me to bring y'all more reviews in the future too. Speaking of reviews, tonight we are talking the new movie Sting, which opens up in theaters everywhere on April 12th. I got a chance to go check out an early screening of this on another one of AMC's Scream Unseen films. And yeah, we're going to break all this down for you here right now. So let's dive right on into Sting. Now, first of all, to set the story up for you here, Sting tells the story of a young girl named Charlotte who, feeling neglected in her home life, happens to gain a pet spider in her apartment building. But it turns out that this pet spider has a ravenous appetite, and as it continues to grow and grow and grow, Charlotte will soon find out that she's not just put her family in danger, but the entire apartment building in danger as well. Now, I've talked about it on this show before, but to hit it again, folks, I do not do spiders, all right? I am an arachnophobe, no questions asked. Spiders are the most terrible thing in the world to me. It doesn't matter. You could bring a serial killer, werewolf, witches, zombies, vampires, mutants. It doesn't matter what it is. None of those things will scare me as bad as a spider and a practical effect spider done in any film you could see. It's the reason why Arachnophobia is still one of the scariest movies I've ever seen in my life. I saw that at too young of an age, and it's kind of funny because as horror fans, we see everything at too young of an age, but I truly believe there is no appropriate age to watch the movie Arachnophobia, and I saw it at a very young age, and that did not help me out with my arachnophobia getting older and older and older. Now, with Sting, what's very interesting about this film is that it's set up from the jump that while it very much looks and acts like a spider in a lot of aspects, that the spider, if you want to call it itself, is not actually a spider. It's an alien, because the beginning of the film does set up that some meteorite crashed down into Earth, into Charlotte's apartment building, and what emerged from this egg in this meteorite was a spider-like alien. And again, this spider-like alien is very ravenous. Charlotte happens to come across it just by chance. And of course, being a child who children aren't afraid of, like, all the creepy crawly things like we adults can be, for whatever reason that is. They're so innocent. It's whatever. I'll never understand it. But the child takes a liking to this spider, goes ahead and takes it back to her apartment, and decides, after looking through inspiration for a name, decides to call it Sting. Now, it's kind of funny because before this film came out and knowing that the name of the spider or the name of the alien is called Sting, in my head I said there was only going to be a few ways to which it actually gets that name. Now, of course, they could be going very practical with it. You know, spider bites you. You could confuse that with, like, getting stung by something. So that can make a lot of sense. Like, maybe the spider bites her and that's where she gets it. But, and I think a lot of you might pick this up here, if it's not going to be that, and it's not going to be named after the musician Sting or the wrestler Sting, who just retired. Sting, thank you for everything you have brought to us in the wrestling world. I've gotten to see numerous of your matches live, and it's going to be crazy not having you around in the pro wrestling world anymore. That retirement is one that's absolutely going to stick for sure, because the guy has been going like crazy for decades at this point. But I digress. I'm off on a tangent there. But if it's none of those things, then I think that a lot of us would probably guess that the only other place that Sting would come from would, of course, be Lord of the Rings, which is exactly where Charlotte gets this name by a copy of The Hobbit sitting up on her bookshelf. And of course, if you have never read or seen The Hobbit or the Lord of the Rings movies at all, or the books, you know that that sword helps to detect when orcs are nearby. It glows blue, and Bilbo uses it, Frodo uses it, either way. But that is what the name of the spider is. Now, beyond that, because obviously a big portion of this film is this spider continuing to get larger and larger and larger, where of course it's going to become a problem for not just Charlotte and her family, but everybody living in this apartment building. But beyond that, one of the other big stories of the film is Charlotte's home life. Now, Charlotte lives with her mother, Heather, along with her stepfather, Ethan, played by Penelope Mitchell and Ryan Corr, along with her newborn baby brother as well, too. And Charlotte's in a very precarious position right now, to where she's feeling a bit neglected. Both her parents are incredibly busy with their jobs. Ethan even more so, as he is he's the handyman for the building. He fixes everything up for everybody in the building. But he's also a comic book artist as well, too, something that Charlotte has taken a liking to. But again, because of her parents' busy schedules, and with the little brother now around, she feels like she's not getting the attention or the love that she very much craves, and is basically acting out in a number of ways to try to, you know, get some attention and kind of make up for what she doesn't have in her home life. And in one aspect, this was done very, very well. This is not even the first movie this year we've gotten, or that I've even reviewed, about a child looking to make a connection with that parent or vice versa. Ghostbusters just did it. Imaginary just did it as well, too. Night Swim had a lot of that as well. So this is something that we get very regularly in horror. And a lot of those other films I've mentioned, you know, they've done decent jobs of showing those relationships and how these characters are trying to find common ground, and that we know by the end of the film they'll find that and the connection will be better. You know, I talked about it in my Ghostbusters Frozen Empire review that I was saddened that they didn't do a better job with that aspect between Phoebe and Gruberson's relationship, because that was one of the best parts of Ghostbusters Afterlife, was that emotional attachment we got from the Spanglers, and they dialed it back a lot in Frozen Empire to the detriment of the film, in my opinion. And here in Sting, I think the problem that comes with it is that it does make sense, this relationship between Charlotte and Ethan. And I love the fact that Ethan is shown to really, really want that connection. You know, he's not the deadbeat dad. He's not the guy in movies who, like, has a lot of these flaws that he has to overcome. Like, Ethan's not presented as perfect, but he is presented, like, from the jump as somebody who actually really, really cares about his family and Charlotte. Like, they show numerous scenes where it's very clear he obviously loves Charlotte and he obviously wants to be her father. And it seems that a lot of the tension, a lot of the strife comes from him, like, being smart about what he's saying. Like, when they discover that Charlotte is keeping this spider in their home, and they're told that this is a new species of spider, it can be very venomous, very dangerous, of course they're very concerned, like, her parents are concerned about this spider being kept there, and Charlotte takes that very, very personally and as a breach of trust. And it's one of those things where a lot of the emotional tension in this film is it's very much manufactured, and it doesn't really pay off in a lot of areas. And not only that, but there's also this kind of antagonistic relationship set up between Charlotte's parents, Heather and Ethan, that doesn't really make all that much sense, because again, we see Ethan trying throughout the film multiple times to connect with Charlotte, and it's almost like Heather's not aware that's going on at all, that Ethan's putting all this effort in, and she's just looking to blame him and not really do her, like, put in her effort for this. And I think that's where the film definitely dropped the ball here. I'm not saying a movie like this about a giant spider that eats people in apartment buildings needs to have this great emotional backstory to it. But if it's going to be such a big part of the story, you can do a better job of making that believable and making that just a little bit more relatable. The movie's hilarious. There's a lot of really, really good jokes in here, and a guy who's becoming my MVP of horror films, Jermaine Fowler, He was in The Blackening. He's in this. He was just in, what the hell was he just in that I just watched too? I'm gonna remember it by the end of this review. But Jermaine Fowler has been popping up in so much over the last year, and I love it because the guy is absolutely hilarious. It was Ricky Stenicki. Ricky Stenicki is what I just watched, which was freaking hilarious as well too. Not a horror movie, but still. Jermaine Fowler is fantastic in it, but he kind of also points out some of the problems that this film definitely has. In which that there's a bit of a racial disparity with like the actors that are in this film, to where they're mostly used as jokes and they're used as being weird and not very normal. Whether it is Jermaine Fowler's Frank the Exterminator, whether it's Danny Kim's Eric, one of the other people living in this apartment building, or whether it's Maria, another one of the tenants living in the apartment building, there's a bit too many stereotypes in here. And again, I get the feeling it wasn't intentional, and you know, that's just me personally. Like, it didn't feel intentional at all, but it does stand out a bit that they're not given like the same treatment in this movie. Now, beyond that, I will say that you're gonna get a lot of spider madness in this very early on, and very quickly does it ramp up as well too. You know, it's interesting because while there are some practical effects in this film, most of this is CGI, which definitely makes it less scarier. Like, it doesn't help. You're an arachnophobe. But using CGI makes it a little bit easier to watch. Although in my screening, something was wrong with the print that we had. The contrast and the tint were all messed up. So anytime there weren't like direct lighting in the scene, we couldn't make out anything that was going on, which sucks because there was a lot of pivotal scenes where we don't know if a certain character is still alive or a certain pet or animal that's been introduced is still alive as well. And that's a little warning for you as well. Pets actually get it a little bit worse in this film than the humans do. There's a little bit set up towards the end of the movie that any of the humans that were attacked, barring one specific case, are still most likely alive, but we never get confirmation of that one way or the other. Now, there is a lot to like about this film. I think that this film is no more harmful than like an Eight-Legged Freaks, because it does find itself heading more towards that like B-movie schlock than it does something more serious affair like Arachnophobia. So I do think this is one that a lot of people will find enjoyment on when it does hit streaming, but it's gotta hit theaters first on April 12th, like I've said. So when you get a chance to check it out, let me know in that comment section what you thought of Sting. How do you fare with spider movies? And if so, if you fare well, what's your favorite spider movie that's out there? Let me know in that comment section. Don't forget, hit that like and subscribe button as well too, folks. We've got more reviews coming out for you here. I am going to be doing Arachnophobia this week. We got Frogman coming, and I'm about to jump into the Omen films along with Winnie the Pooh 2 for you as well. So that's going to do it for me here now. My name is T. We've been talking scary movies. Stay scared. Hey everybody, looking for a great way to stay up to date on horror news, as well as read the best of articles on anything scary out in the world right now? Then you need to head over to the Fangoria shop and get yourself a subscription. If you go to shop.fangoria.com/axdew, you can use my own personalized 20% discount to save 20% off on Fangoria magazine subscriptions, as well as 20% off any other items in their fantastic shop. This is a great deal. If you've ever been wanting to get yourself a subscription, now is the time to do so. Head to shop.fangoria.com/axdew.